Zombie, a paranormal podcast where I bring you a new story of the paranormal. So grab your coffee, wine, or drink of choice, and let's go. Tonight we're going to talk about a creature that has been around for a long time and is still such a popular paranormal creature that they have made appearances in many movies, TV shows, and stories, including some of my favorites, which include Supernatural, Underworld, and the Harry Potter series. They are just normal people until the full moon, then they become hairy, vicious beasts. And last week on my episode, I went off on a bit of a tangent about whether or not they're cannibals. That's right, guys. Tonight we are going to talk about the werewolf. So buckle up, because this is one roller coaster of information. All right, guys, we're going to start out with the origin story of the werewolf. So where did the story of the werewolf come from? Well, because the werewolf has been around for so long, it's kind of difficult to pinpoint where the actual origin story was. Scholars are a bit torn as far as this goes. So some scholars say that it came from the story of the Epic of Gilgamesh. In the second millennia BC, one of the oldest known texts was written on tablets, and I'm not talking about the iPad kind. I'm talking about the stone kind of tablet. So the Epic of Gilgamesh was written on these stone tablets and later translated. In this story, Ishtar, who is the goddess of fertility, love, war, and sex in Mesopotamia, has caught feelings for Gilgamesh. He doesn't feel the same. You see, he knows how she's treated her previous love interests and, well, it's not been kind. Like, there's a story of one young man who was a shepherd. He fell in love with the goddess, who quickly became tired of his affections. And so what did she do? Oh, she just turned him into a wolf. He was then unfortunately killed by his own dogs. This might have been the first story ever written down of a man being turned into a wolf, but I don't know if I'd really consider this story the first story of the werewolf. If you feel like that is the first story of a werewolf because a man was turned into a wolf, he didn't actually turn into a wolf, he was turned into a wolf by a goddess, then I guess you're with the first set of scholars. So if you don't agree with the first group of scholars, you're probably more with me and the second group of scholars. So this group believes that the first story of the werewolf began with the story of Nicaris. And this story was found in the Satyricon, written by a Roman writer Petronius in AD 27 to 66, is what the thing said. Honestly, I don't really know how a lot of, I guess it was literally the year 27 to the year 66. So anyway, many believe that this story of the Satyricon was the first story of the werewolf. So the Satyricon, that is not that easy to say. The Satyricon is a collection of stories, one of which includes the story of Nicaris. So who's Nicaris, right? He was a soldier who was traveling with an acquaintance. It does specify, well, I mean, it says that this is an acquaintance, so I'm going to guess that they weren't really friends. They probably just like knew each other and were walking in the same general direction or however they were traveling, so they decided to do it together. Well, as many people do when they're traveling, they had to find a place to pee. And I totally agree with this. I totally understand having to find a place to pee because anytime I travel, I'm going to need to stop to pee several times. So they stopped in the only place that makes sense before indoor plumbing, a graveyard, right? So the two men are standing there. They're urinating, hopefully not on someone's grave because that would be kind of messed up, right? And the acquaintance all of a sudden starts maniacally laughing. He then rips off his clothes, turns into a wolf, and runs toward the town. So Nicaris is, I imagine, standing there like in a peeing stance, very vulnerable with his goods out, and he is probably just like, what? And the H-E, like double hockey sticks, just happened. What did I just see? So he goes over to the clothes. I mean, I would have probably ran the other direction, but no. He goes over to the clothes that the guy had ripped off and finds that they're now made of stone. Why? I don't know. It doesn't really go into why his clothes turn into stone. But apparently in this story, when a werewolf changes, his clothes turn to stone. Maybe that's why there's not just werewolf clothes, like people's clothes all over the place from where they've turned into werewolves. Right now, they're just rocks. So just think of that. Anytime you see a pile of stones, that's probably a werewolf's favorite place to change. I'm just saying. Okay, anyway. So Nicholas goes to the town. And when he gets there, he finds out that his acquaintance has actually been killing some livestock in the village. But before he could kill too many, he was actually stabbed through the throat and killed by a servant. So I guess the moral of the story here is don't pee in a graveyard. If you do, your companion might turn into a wolf, eat livestock out of the town, and then be killed by a servant, right? That seems like that's the moral of the story, right? But anyway, this is the first story of a man who could turn into a wolf. So this, of course, is the origin, the very first story of the werewolf. Now, there are more stories of werewolves throughout history and in different cultures. So werewolves make their appearance in Greek mythology of the Lycaon. In this story, the king of Arcadia, named Lycaon, wanted to see just how divine Zeus was. So he served Zeus some dinner, including meat. But the trick was that the meat was actually mixed with human as well. So Zeus gets really mad, as anyone would if you're fed people for dinner and you don't know about it. I mean, I'd be upset if you fed me people for dinner and I did know about it, but I definitely would be upset if you fed me people for dinner and I didn't know about it. So he turns the king into a wolf. Fun fact, this story is why you may also hear werewolves referred to as lycanthropes. So Plato actually notated this story and stated in some of his work that a person who has tasted human flesh could then be transformed into a wolf. Now, in Roman culture, there was an author named Pliny the Elder. He had a more innocent and less paranormal take on the story of the werewolf. And honestly, this one kind of makes more sense than a lot of other stories about the werewolf. But he believed that the story of the werewolf evolved from a coming-of-age ritual. This ritual required adolescents to remove their clothes and live naked in the woods as wolves. No human contact was allowed. Once they began living truly as wolves, then they could put their clothes back on and rejoin society. So Pliny thinks the stories of these true coming-of-age rituals got twisted throughout history to a story of people who can actually transform into wolves. Like I said earlier, this story seems very plausible. It's an idea that definitely could be where the stories of the werewolf actually came from. It's kind of like a game of telephone. But like way before telephones existed, because it was a long time ago when people wrote on stone tablets. But anyway, each person gets the story. They hear it from another person. They then pass that story on, but not before adding their own little spin to it, or maybe even how they thought they heard it told to them. And then, of course, that story escalates and escalates and escalates until you have the story of the man-eating beast who is human at times and werewolf the rest of the time. But, you know, this idea isn't as fun or spooky as a person becoming a mutate wolf with a hunger for human flesh, right? Then there's, of course, the Nordic folklore that talks about werewolves in the saga of the Volsung. This story was written down in the 13th century, but was an oral tradition in Old Norse culture long before that. The story tells of a man, his son, and his nephew, who live in the forest as fugitives and fight and steal to survive. So they're kind of like Robin Hood, except for they don't like steal from the rich and give to the poor. They're just steal from everybody to survive. So one day, these men come across a building that has two random men sleeping in it. And they notice Hanging above these men are the skin of wolves. So Sigmund and his son put on these wolf skins and transform into wolves themselves. But then they come across the nephew, and Sigmund accidentally bites him on the throat and injures him. I don't know how you accidentally bite somebody on the throat, but I guess if you're a werewolf, it can happen. So they take the nephew back to this building where they see two weasels. And this is where the story gets a bit strange. If you're not on some drugs, it might make some sense if you're on some drugs, but if you're not, it gets a little bit psychedelic here for a second. So they take the nephew back to the building where they see two weasels. These weasels do, I guess, some sort of charades performance to show them how to cure the nephew with an herb. So they get this herb. Where from, you might ask? Why, from a raven, of course. You know, when you need a herb to cure somebody from a werewolf bite to the neck that the weasels have told you about in charades, you definitely have to find a raven. I mean, this is just common sense, people. I mean, these are things that you really should be taught from childhood. Anyway, they cure him with these herbs that they got from the raven. Then they abandon the wolf skins and become men again. It doesn't say what actually happened to the men who actually owned the skins, though I didn't really read the full thing, so maybe there is somewhere in there that they talk about that part, but they didn't talk about it on the little thing I read about this. So I guess that would be enough origin stories of the werewolf. That's several different stories from different cultures about where the werewolf came from. So now let's get to the good part. How does one become a werewolf, you might ask? I mean, right? Isn't that what everybody wants to know? How do you become a werewolf? Well, apparently there are several different ways to become a werewolf. We will go over a few different ways people turn into werewolves. The first one being the genetic werewolf. So the most obvious way is to be born to parents with werewolf genetics. I kind of wonder if that skips a generation. Is it like a dominant trait or a recessive one? Like, do both your parents have to have the gene for you to be a werewolf? Or does one parent need to have the gene? Like, I need to know the genetics behind actually becoming a werewolf. Like, what kind of gene is this? You know, is it easy to become a werewolf? Or is it really, really rare to be a genetic werewolf? So I looked this up, of course, and apparently both parents actually have to have the werewolf gene to pass it on, though they don't have to be werewolves themselves. So it is a recessive gene because you have to get it from both parents. Little science fact for you today. This would be a recessive gene because both parents have to carry it, but they can just be a carrier of one gene. And because their other parent didn't have that gene, they did not actually get the werewolf transformation part, like they didn't become werewolves, I guess I should say, but they carry the genetics for being a werewolf. So like, I wonder, you know, I work labor and delivery, and I'm gonna have to ask one of the OBs if there's any genetic testing to see if you actually have you know, werewolf genes. So just so you can prepare yourself, because if you have werewolf genes, you marry someone else who has werewolf genes, I mean, then you have to worry about having a werewolf. And if you're not a werewolf yourself and you have a werewolf, that's going to be weird around like adolescence and stuff. So you'd really want to prepare yourself like in advance. So if you are a genetic lycanthrope, you won't be born furry though, okay? It doesn't happen out of the womb. No, no, no. Instead, it will happen during late puberty. Like, you don't already have enough to worry about with, you know, the changes in your body, your body hair in weird places. Now you're going to have body hair all over and you're going to be a werewolf who's probably going to eat people. So good luck with that. I mean, that's going to trump acne for sure. So the pros of this kind of werewolf transmission, and you possibly have family who can help you with the change, right? I mean, like if your grandparents are werewolves, if your parents are werewolves, I imagine it would be easier because they can tell you what it's like to change into a werewolf. But the cons, unfortunately, is you may not know about this because if your parents have the recessive gene, they don't know you're going to be a werewolf. Then boom, puberty hits, all these weird things happen, and then you become a werewolf. That would be quite a shock. But now if you were not born a werewolf, I know you're sitting out there and you're like, oh, I've already gone through puberty. I definitely didn't get the werewolf gene. Don't worry. There's other ways. There's other ways. So the next type of becoming a werewolf we're going to go over is the werewolf who was cursed. So the idea behind the shape-shifting werewolf in this theory is that a person is cursed and now can shape-shift as they please. So they're usually cursed by a clergyman in some cases. This is the most rare way to become a werewolf. Not much is known about this type other than that is thought that the original werewolf had the ability to share his curse. So I guess the idea is that this original werewolf was cursed by something or somebody and became a wolf. And he, since he's the alpha, the main, the first wolf, he can share the curse with other people. But other random people can't just give you the curse, right? So some of these stories, of course, are centered around black magic spells that transform people into werewolves. But honestly, there wasn't a lot of information about this kind because apparently it's the most rare. And I'm sure that's why there wasn't a lot of factual scientific evidence behind this type of becoming a werewolf. I mean, clearly, that would be the only reason. It's not because they're not real. That's ridiculous. So the next type of werewolf is the werewolf who was bitten. This werewolf is the type we see most in the movies, of course, in the stories of the werewolves. The regular normal person ends up in the wrong place at the wrong time and gets bitten or scratched by a werewolf. But the werewolf doesn't kill the person. A lot of times in movies, they're like interrupted before they can like eat the person whole. So instead, that person is now doomed to become a werewolf at the sight of the full moon. This occurs, of course, because of some kind of weird werewolf bacteria that is toxic to humans and causes them to transform into wolves and apparently is found in the saliva of wolves. This werewolf bacteria. So apparently werewolves carry almost all of this bacteria in their saliva. I'll link my sources down below because I found this online. So I'm sure it's very factual scientific evidence about, you know, how werewolves have the bacteria mostly in their saliva. I'm sure they've done research and stuff like that. So you can definitely look into that. I'm sure it's real. So this means basically that if you're bitten, you have a very good chance of contracting that bacteria into your bloodstream because it's in their mouth and you're bitten by their mouth. So there's all that bacteria there. And then, of course, it gets into your bloodstream. And what happens? Boom, you become a werewolf. Now, I don't know what kind of antibiotics we could give for, like, the werewolf bacteria. Like, is it susceptible to anything? Like, can we do, like a culture sensitivity and see? I'm sure if it's anything, it's probably vancomycin. Like, if anything would kill the werewolf bacteria, I'm sure you'd have to use something like vancomycin. Like, I'm pretty positive. Probably, like, 6 weeks. Pick line, all that stuff. You definitely need that to cure that bacteria, that werewolf bacteria, right? So, but you know, who knows? They might just try a broad spectrum, right? If you're getting bitten, just give you that prophylactically, see if that helps. Who knows? So, the pros of this, you can become a werewolf if you were not born one. The biggest pro, right? You weren't born one? Boom. Now you can become one. You just have to get bitten by one. So then you, the cons, of course, is what we're going to go over next. So you have to get bitten by a werewolf and survive the attack. Not as easy as it sounds, but that's the first con. You actually have to get bitten by the werewolf and then you have to survive. Then you have to suffer from the possible symptoms of werewolf bacteria because, I mean, you can't just boom, instantly turn into a werewolf. Obviously, the bacteria would have to take over your body to the point that you don't have any chance of fighting it off and it has literally taken over your body and then you become a werewolf. Then even if you become a werewolf this way, the last con I found, you probably will still need the full moon to transform. I mean, you can't just be like, hey, it's a Friday night and I feel like chasing some bunnies in the woods. I'm going to turn into a werewolf. If there's not a full moon, you can't do it. It's ridiculous. This is a list of other random ways I found on the internet to become a werewolf. You can be conceived under a full moon, all right? That one's a little bit difficult because if you're listening to this, you've probably already been conceived, and so you cannot be conceived under a full moon. If you were conceived under a full moon, you may be a werewolf. and I'm sorry to break that to you. If your parents don't know exactly when they conceived you, like I would say 98.99999% of the population, then you probably will never know if you were born under a full moon. Or if you were conceived under a full moon, I'm sorry. Your parents probably remember when you were born, but they definitely don't probably remember when you were conceived. But anyway, you can drink water that was touched by a wolf. So if you see a wolf drinking from a stream, don't drink out of that stream, man. Just dehydrate. Just dehydrate. Otherwise, you'll become a werewolf. So then the last obscure way I found that you can become a werewolf is that you can sleep under a full moon on Fridays. I guess it only happens on Fridays. Freaky Friday, I guess, is what would be happening. That would definitely be a Freaky Friday. And you have to be slept. You have to be slept under. You have to be sleeping under the full moon, apparently, at the time. So you need a full moon on a Friday, and that's where you're going to sleep for the night. And then you may become a werewolf. So I guess the biggest question around werewolves here, right, is like, why the moon? Like, what does the moon have to do with anything? But I think that it has something more to do with the fact that, like, the nighttime is scary and things that are associated with it are terrifying. So since wolves are nocturnal predators, well, werewolves must be associated with the full moon, right? We want the light of the full moon, but because the night is so dark and mysterious, we want the light of the full moon. But we don't know what lurks in that dark, right? So, of course, we'll go into the full moon a little bit more now, which is one thing that is usually needed to transform into a werewolf. There are a couple other things, and you may not have heard of these before, so I'll go over those with you too. But let's start with the full moon. It's the one we know the most. It's the one we see in all the movies. We read in all the books. We watch in all the TV shows. So a lot of werewolf movies and stories include the full moon. For some reason, that old full moon seems to be just what is needed to force the beast out of the person that is infected. Cursed or infected? I'm not sure which one it would really be. I guess if you think of a bacteria, if you were bitten and you have the bacteria, you're infected. And if you were cursed by the original werewolf, then you're cursed, I guess. So I guess it really just depends on how you acquired your vampire. Ooh, I got vampires in the brain. How you acquired your werewolf status. Werewolf is hard to say after you said it like 12 times. I'm just saying. So I guess, you know, really you can call it either one, infected or cursed, whatever's appropriate for you. But the idea of the full moon making people lose their marbles is not a new concept. Listen, as a nurse, I can tell you that the full moon does affect how some people act, and the type of nights we usually have in the hospital during a full moon are just a little bit crazier than regular nights most of the time. So that being said, there are some non-crazy full moon nights, and of course there are some crazy nights that are not full moons, but rarely is there a normal full moon night. I'm just going to tell you all that. In the hospital, there's not. So this concept actually led Australia's Calvary Mater Newcastle Hospital to conduct a study that found that of all the violent behavioral incidents that occurred in the hospital, 23% of them occurred during a full moon. Now, is that a coincidence? Maybe. Or is there some kind of magic that occurs during the full moon that leads us to choose bad behavior or brings out the beast in us? So other items that may be needed, a magical ointment from the devil or a demon, and we'll get into that in some of our stories here in just a little bit, a magical wolf's pelt or fur that has been given to you by a demon. Again, we'll talk about that in our stories here in a little bit. So I guess what I'm getting here basically is don't take items from the devil or demons. It does not end well. Even if you want to be a werewolf, go just like find somebody to curse you or find a werewolf to bite you. Okay, I'm just saying. So let's now, you know, I'm a nurse. I love to go into medical conditions that could possibly be some sort of source of something. So let's go into medical conditions that could be some of the origin behind werewolves. Okay, so the werewolf phenomenon. I cannot say my words today. My gracious. I guess the end of my third 12 hours shift is like getting to me. Like, I worked the last three nights, my 12-hour shifts, and it's actually like 10 o'clock in the morning now, and I'm recording this before I go to sleep. So I've got to go back to work tonight and work my fourth 12-hour shift this week. And this is like the fourth week in a row that I've done this. So my words are not coming out. So my words are not coming out right. Okay. They're just not. So the werewolf phenomenon may have a medical diagnosis behind it. You guys know, like I said, love to look at possible medical explanations. All right. So there might actually be like one explanation or maybe a few as to where some of this come from. So one story that's associated sometimes with werewolf stories is the story of Peter the Wild Boy in 1725. So Peter was found naked on all fours, alone wandering in a German forest. He was about 12 years old and was unable to speak or walk. Some thought he had been raised by wolves, and some even believed him to be a werewolf himself. So the truth of Peter the Wild Boy is that he likely had a genetic condition called Pitt-Hopkins syndrome, which is a condition that causes lack of speech and comes with seizures, distinct facial features, difficulty breathing, and intellectual challenges, and was probably the reason he was abandoned, I'm sure, by his parents. Is just one of history's known feral children, which are children basically that are abandoned by their parents and then grow up without human contact. So they mimic animals. So Peter wasn't a werewolf, but let's get into people who actually suffer from clinical lycanthropy. So this is a rare psychological condition that causes people to believe they are changing into a wolf or other animal. It is thought that these people are suffering from another form of mental illness, and this is a symptom of the delusions caused by something such as like schizophrenia. Schizophrenia, you can have audio-visual hallucinations, which means you can see things that are not there, and you can hear things that are not there, or both. So you can hear voices. You could hear voices and see a pink bunny in the corner of your room. The pink bunny could be the voice talking to you out of the corner of your room. Schizophrenia is, I can't even imagine. There's actually like a video online that's like what it's like to have schizophrenia. And it's literally, if you play it, there's just like all of these things happening and this person in your ear. And it's just, it's like, honestly, you can't listen to it for very long before you're just like, this, I can't listen to this. But people who are schizophrenic have to. They don't have an option other than medication, and medication doesn't always make it go away. So this clinical lycanthropy is honestly probably a delusional idea that's associated with their schizophrenia. But of course, this may be underdiagnosed because of the uniqueness of the symptoms. So these people may be put off just as delusional and not actually diagnosed with clinical lycanthropy. You know, if you have a patient you think has schizophrenia and they tell you that they turn into a werewolf, you're not going to necessarily be like, oh, you have clinical lycanthropy. You're going to be like, oh, okay, why would you think that you turn into a werewolf? What would make you think? How are you feeling like you're turning into a werewolf? And then you try to reorient them. You know, to me, you still look the same. I don't see that you have any features of a werewolf, that type of stuff. But you wouldn't just be like, oh yeah, this is clinical lycanthropy. I mean, like I would, so I probably shouldn't go to school for like psychology or anything like that anytime soon. But yeah, just saying. So there has actually been 13 diagnosed cases of this clinical lycanthropy since the 1850s. And, you know, can these people really become a wolf? I mean, in their minds, they do. In the physical world, no, of course they don't. They don't turn into a wolf. They can't turn into a wolf, though they may believe and feel like they have turned into a wolf. And not all people who are delusional can be reoriented. We should always try to let them know where we're at and what's going on and reorient them, but it's not just not always possible. So, you know, it's a difficult situation to be in as far as that goes, because if that's part of your delusion, then that's part of your delusion. And delusions to the person that are having delusions are real. And they're not real to people who aren't seeing the delusion, but to people who are seeing the delusion, they're very much as real as you or I are. I'm just saying, like, imagine you're taking care of this patient and all of a sudden he says like, oh, hey man, I'm about to turn into a wolf. And then some like weird stuff starts happening. You know, people maybe begin to believe he is really a werewolf, right? So, like, I mean, go back to the past before science was a thing and people, you know, knew about mental disorders and stuff like that. If a man comes up to you and's like, hey, man, I turn into a wolf at night, and then all of a sudden the cattle in town start showing up mutilated, then people would probably be like, hey, that guy's a werewolf. He told me he was a werewolf himself, and I've seen him. I've seen him turn into a werewolf. And now all of a sudden you have a werewolf in your village that's terrorizing the town. So, I mean, that's how easy that would go, especially before people knew about mental illnesses and stuff like that. So the next condition I'm going to talk about that may have fed some into the werewolf legend is hypertrichosis. So hypertrichosis is a rare genetic disorder that causes a person to grow excessive hair all over their bodies. Sorry, I just hit my mic. This hair is in places it wouldn't be normal to grow hair. Sometimes, I mean, like your face, like not your beard area or your eyebrow area, but I mean like your forehead, your nose, your cheeks, places where you wouldn't normally grow like a head of hair. These people have like thick hair. So now, I mean, imagine, you know, you live a long time ago and there's not a lot of scientific knowledge and you come across an individual with this condition. I mean, it would be easy to mistake this person for an animal mutant, right? Because you'd be like, oh my gosh, that is not a normal person. So other medical conditions I found that could be mistaken for werewolves, werewolfism, were rabies, which makes sense. I mean, they're not mentally well. They are foaming at the mouth. I mean, that can look really, really scary and make someone think like, hey, this person is becoming something that's not human. Now, hallucinations are another option. Now, the site I looked at said something about like hallucinogenic herbs, but I don't know if you're tripping and think you are like a werewolf or think you see a werewolf or both. But the last one that was listed, and this one I'm going to have help with, was food poisoning. I could not figure out food poisoning. The only thing I could think is like you get really, really sick. So you're like retching and like just like bent over, like retching because you have nothing left in you. And maybe it looks like you're contorting your body or something. That is literally all I've got on that. So if you have an idea, of course, be sure to tell me how someone would confuse food poisoning with becoming a werewolf on like my Instagram page, okay? Just let me know. You know, we talked about the werewolf's appearance in different cultures in the distant past. And we talked about medical conditions that may be confused with like becoming a werewolf. And we even talked about ways to become a werewolf. But now let's talk about some people in history who were real werewolves. I say that with quotations, real werewolves, right? So, well, you know, at least they admitted to be werewolves, okay? So this would be the time in the podcast that I'm going to make sure that little ears are not listening. These stories do contain some details that you probably don't want your little zombies listening to. So if you are listening to this with the littles, I'll give you just about 30 seconds to either turn it off or get them out of the room or put your earbuds in before I get into these more gruesome details. All right, guys. So now that we're done with kind of waiting there, that wasn't exactly 30 seconds, but from the time I started talking and saying that, to now will be about 30 seconds. So the first story is the story of Pierre Bergot and Michel Verdun, who were Frenchmen in 1521. So Pierre was a shepherd, and according to him, one day, three demons on horseback, who of course were wearing all black, all of a sudden just rode up on him. I didn't know demons rode horses. I want to know, were they regular horses or demon horses? I'm just going to need to know if a demon rises to a regular horse. And if he does, like, where does he keep his horse? And if he rides a demon horse, then do demon horses just, like, graze in the hellfires? I mean, I don't know. So, anyway, back to Pierre and his interaction with the cowboy demons. Pierre says the demons asked him why he seemed worried. He let them know he was afraid of his flock being attacked. Well, the demons offered a solution for this. They tell him that they will assure all of his sleep, that's what I need to get, is some sleep myself, all of his sheep are safe, and will even make sure he comes into some money. Sounds good, right? But they are demons, so what is the catch? What does he have to do for this, right? Oh, you know, it's nothing big. He just has to serve the demon as his master and renounce God, his baptism, and give up his place in heaven. That's all they want from him. Well, apparently this sounded like an even trade to Pierre. So Pierre and his friend Mikhail go to a sabbat of witches, of warlocks, I'm sorry, a sabbat of warlocks to complete this deal with the demons. When they get there, they get naked and then they're anointed with a magical ointment. This is where the ointment comes into play. Then their legs, arms, and feet began to turn hairy and they completely changed into the beast. So you have just made a deal with demons, given your immortal soul, and have become a powerful beast. What do you do next? Well, if you're Pierre and Mikhail, you hunt down and attack children and commit other hideous crimes. Really? Children? You are this big, powerful werewolf, and you are going to go after innocent, helpless children? I mean, that seems unnecessary. That seems unnecessary. So really, Pierre and Mikhail were criminals and horrible people who used the werewolf as their excuse for why they attacked and hurt children, which is messed up. Now, they were both burned at the stake for being werewolves after they admitted to being werewolves. Okay, so now let's talk about Gilles Garnier. Garnier, something like that. I bet it's Garnier because this is French. His story isn't any better than Pierre's. Again, Gilles was a French man. This time in the 1570s, what is up, France? Are y'all okay? You okay, girl? You gotten better since the 1500s? Just wondering, like, were the 1500s just like rough for you, or are you still plagued by werewolves today? I'm gonna need to know, France. I'd like to visit sometime, but I'm gonna need to know if you're still plagued by werewolves. Gilles was a hermit and lived just outside of Dole, France with his wife. So all of a sudden, children in the town start going missing. And then some would turn up. Well, their bodies would. Well, some of their bodies would. They would be mutated and others would just be torn apart. Well, tired of this happening, of course, the townspeople began searching for the culprit. And one night, they come across a figure standing over the body of a dead child. They capture him. And guess who it is? Yeah, Gilles Garnier, right? So during his trial, Gilles spilled the beans and told the town everything. Buckle up, guys. There will be more demons. So Gilles says one night, a demon visited him and gave him an ointment. Again with the demon ointment. Like, don't put on demon ointment. Just go get you some triple antibiotic ointment or something, but don't put on demon ointment. Okay? I've said it. I'm going to continue it. Don't put on demon ointment. He is given this ointment by the demon, and this ointment would cause him to turn into a wolf. Well, what is Gilles to do? He's an old, feeble man who is starving and has difficulty finding food for him and his wife. So he takes it. The problem is the ointment has a bad side effect. Once he becomes a werewolf, he is unable to control his hunger. So he killed and ate the murdered children. He even admitted that he brought some of the flesh back home and fed it to his wife. Now, I will tell you, I'll let you know that the story that I read this on said that he did admit all of this information while he was being tortured. So was this a false confession or was this guy a sick individual? Well, he was found guilty of both witchcraft because he used a magical ointment and lycanthropy because he turned into a werewolf, so they burned him at the stake. So apparently burning a werewolf at the stake is how you kill a werewolf in these stories. Now let's talk about one more case. And this one may be the most disturbing of all of the stories. This is the one of the Bedburg werewolf. So Peter Stubb, he has a lot of pronunciations of his name and many aliases, but we'll just call him Peter. So this story occurred in the 16th century in Bedburg, Germany, where a malicious, monstrous creature began terrorizing the town by killing its cattle. Oh, and also by kidnapping and brutally killing its women and children. but literally the article listed the kettle first. Yeah, let that sink in. The town decided there were obviously two logical explanations for the situation. Either they were being attacked by a demon from hell, or a werewolf was in town. So in this town, there was a wealthy farmer whose wife had died and he was raising his teenage children. His name was Peter Stubb. The townspeople found him influential and he seemed to be well-liked in the community. But that was just his outer persona. Internally, he was hiding something much, much worse. So for years, the farmers in this town were flabbergasted by what was savagely killing and ripping open their cattle, and then leaving their mutilated corpses in the field. They were sure they had a wolf problem, and boy, did they ever. The young women and children started going missing. Do you notice a theme to these stories? Yeah, me too, and I hate it. These missing people who would be found, like in the previous stories, brutally mutilated, some were never found. Some pregnant women's corpses were found to have had their babies ripped from their bodies, along with their uteruses. That's pretty gruesome. This is why I didn't want your little zombies listening. So some people thought it could be a pack of hungry wolves, picking off the weaker, smaller people in the community. I mean, they were right about some of that. They found out that Peter would cover himself with the skin of a wolf and would then hunt down and kill his victims. He said that the devil gave him a magic belt of wolf fur. Here's where the belt and the wolf fur come into play. When he was 12. And he found that when he put it on, he would become a wolf. In reality, Peter was a serial killer and cannibal who killed 13 children, 2 pregnant women, and numerous livestock. He admitted to eating the hearts and other organs from his victims raw. He even referred to them as, dainty morsels, like they were some kind of little dessert. So this is just too much and too disgusting, and some people are so horrible, and sometimes I hate it here, and sometimes I don't like people or don't like two people, and this is why. So, you know, guys, make sure to teach your kids that not everyone is a nice person and that they should trust their gut. If they feel uncomfortable, get out of there. If something happens that makes them uncomfortable, make sure they let you know. Let them know there's never any secrets. Let them know there's no reason to keep secrets. And let them know to tell you if somebody tells them not to tell you a secret, or that you'll be mad if you know the secret. Always tell them they can share their secrets. And let them share their secrets without being mad at them, okay? They're kids, they're people. Think of the things you did when you were their age and the mistakes you made. And remember that they are doing what you did just now. And you're your mom, just hoping for the best. But teach your kids, guys, that people can be bad and not to trust everyone. All right, guys. Question is, I guess, is the werewolf a dangerous monster? Or is he just misunderstood? I mean, werewolves seem to have been just the scapegoat that people use to explain the unexplainable. People, I'm sure, could not imagine people killing and eating each other. So it must be a murderous beast that is doing it, right? I mean, no one can be that horrible, right? I know they can. I just don't want them to be able to be that horrible, guys. Oh my gosh. Okay. So people, in order to cope with this and to make sense of it, made a creature that would be able to eat people. Well, now that society is more educated in science and in the sickness of what the human mind is capable of, there are far less sightings of the werewolf. But the sightings are not zero. So is this because of the huge cult following that encompasses the werewolf and werewolf movies have? Or is this because there are still some things out there that are unknown and unexplainable? What do you guys think? Is the werewolf a real, elusive, human beast creature? Or is the werewolf just a fun character of supernatural stories who has been criminalized by vicious killers? Go to my Instagram page, @MombiePodcast, and let me know. Whether we believe in them or we don't, one thing is a true fact. The werewolf has been a topic of discussion and lore for a long time. They do not seem to be going anywhere anytime soon. Okay, well, thanks for joining me for this week's paranormal story. This one was actually a bit longer. I got a bit more into my research and stuff like that. And yeah, so this one was a bit longer than my normal ones. But I mean, we covered the history. We covered how to become a werewolf if you want to be. We talked about, you know, medical conditions that could be confused as being a werewolf. And we even talked about people who claimed to be werewolves in real life. So don't forget to go to my Instagram page at Mommy Podcast and let me know who is your favorite movie, TV, or book werewolf. Just let me know. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast so that you see future episodes when they upload. Please rate the podcast. Please give me 5 stars. This just helps me build my audience and find people who like the paranormal like I do. And like the factual history and information behind some of this paranormal stuff too. Make sure to follow me on all the social medias at Mommy Podcast and check out my website, mommypodcast.com, for episode notes and blogs. As always, my sources will be in my show notes and they're also on my blog post at the bottom of my blog post. You can also, of course, always email me suggestions and your personal paranormal stories at mommypodcast@gmail.com. Okay, so I am going to go, and I'm going to go to sleep now because my brain is not functioning anymore. But mommies, until next time, may your coffee be strong and your wine be stronger.